From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Being an ever better gardener means staying open to change. As long as we've both been gardening, my friend Joe Lample was saying to me the other day, we're still evolving, still learning lessons every single growing season. We were comparing notes on the phone about the season we'd just each put to bed, Joe in Atlanta and me up north in New York State, and decided to bring you into the conversation about what 2021 taught us and what we've got planned in 2022 in case our ahas can help you be a better gardener too. But first, this message.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
Joe Lample is the longtime creator and host of the public television program Growing a Greener World, and also of the Joe Gardner podcast. As if he needed more to do, in recent years, he's created something else, the Joe Gardner Online Gardening Academy, a curriculum of virtual courses on topics from seeds to tomatoes, pests and weeds, to soil science, and lots more. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. I'm doing great. How are you?
You're just down there, like, kicking back, relaxing, doing nothing, right?
You know, funny you should say that. I just had a chat with one of my team members today, and we were brainstorming about the next new thing. And it's like, we need another thing to do. No, I don't think so.
You and I need mental health help. My best friend.
Do they know our nicknames for each other?
Yeah. I call you CM.
For crazy man. And you were CW.
Yes, for crazy woman. My best friend, Erica, for years says, oh, Margaret, no, she's not type A. She's type AAA.
I love that.
So I think you too.
I'm there. I have my hand raised to that one.
Yeah. So, you know, we were, as I said in the introduction, we were like chatting on the phone the other day, as we do pretty regularly, and comparing notes, commiserating and whatever. And, you know, one of the things that was like a highlight, that's been a highlight in recent years, that's definitely shifting, is we're both seeing among our readers and listeners and so forth, sort of this receptivity and, in fact, excitement about like ecological horticulture, about ecology and managing the garden less fastidiously and so forth. And I know you've been evolving and evolving and evolving how you manage your place. So new stuff this year about that?
Yes. You know, I had this little voice in my head all the time about this tape that plays back of all the new things that I am learning along with everybody else. And, you know, on that note, that is something I think gardeners get this when they, as I say, you know, today I'm more passionate than I was about gardening yesterday, and tomorrow I'll be more passionate than I am today. And that's just because there is always more to learn. Those aha moments in the garden, or maybe it's a learning about a new insect or a plant or some fun fact that takes my breath away. And this I was thinking too, if you add up all those days over the years of being breathless, it's a wonder that I'm still even here. But that's how gardening, that's how gardening does for me. And I'm sure many listeners can probably relate to that. But to your point, this year, as that little tape continues to play in my head, I'm thinking about the Doug Tallamy's of the world and Rebecca McMackin's and the messaging that we're getting more and more about it's okay not to be so tidy and neat in our garden. And in fact, there's a reason not to be. For example, you know, the drum is beating loud this year about leave the leaves. You know, we've been hearing that a lot from Doug Tallamy. And I'm the guy that for the past several years on Saturdays in November, I am out there in my truck picking up bagged leaves from subdivisions around my neighborhood that they're required to get the leaves off their property or out of sight. And so they, you know, the average home has 30 something bags of leaves and they're just sitting there. And here's the sad part about it. They're going to the landfill. They're not, there's no recycling composting facility for that around here. So they just load them up in the trucks, but the trucks can only take 8 per household per pickup. So, you know, that's a big conundrum. And those leaves, I look at it as rescuing those leaves, liberating the leaves and then, you know, bringing them home. And here's my point to all of this is in the past years, I've been shredding them. And selfishly, what I'm doing is I'm saving the leaves from the landfill, but I'm bringing them home and I'm shredding them up to, because I love my leaf mulch. And so by spring, I've got this huge stockpile of shredded leaves. Well, now I'm thinking about, you know, what we've learned in recent years about all the overwintering insects that are using those leaves. And so I don't want to shred them anymore. So I do a fair amount. I do about half of them is shredded. But I, for every one bag I shred, I liberate a bag. I free the leaves, as I say, out into my landscape. So when I'm picking up these bags and I happen to meet the people that live there and I'm telling them what I'm doing, I say, well, you know, half these bags I'm going to dump out that you've spent time bagging up. I'm going to dump them out on my landscape beds at home, my native plant areas, to free the leaves and just improve the soil and let those overwintering insects do their thing. So
yeah,
it's kind of my carbon offset to, well, gosh, you know, recovering 100% of those bag leaves from the landfill, but then allowing half the bags I collect to just be released back into the woods.
Right. And so leaf litter being the, you know, the support of leaf litter, like, and having areas where we let the leaves lie and let leaf litter build up, as you say, let overwintering little creatures do their thing in there, and then let that gradually at nature's pace break down and create a duff layer, create natural mulch and add organic matter back to the soil. So
yeah.
And you know, I love leaf mulch too. And so I've had the same kind of tension point in my head, knowing what I know now from people like you mentioned, like Rebecca and Doug and so forth. You know, but I think that's right, a sort of halvesies thing, because it's better than what people used to do by far, which was people burned leaves. You know, as you say, in your area and many other areas, they're going in plastic bags to the landfill.
Yeah.
Still. So that's not a great thing either. So yeah. And this whole soil, you know, adding to the soil, supporting the soil, finding ways to rest our soil, because you have this well-known, people will probably recognize a picture of it. You know, your raised bed sort of vegetable production garden. But I have a tiny little raised bed garden, and, you know, some years I feel like the soil needs a rest, and I'm always looking for ways to do that. And it certainly needs lots of organic matter, which we were just talking about. So do you sort of think about that too, like other ways to either feed it, so to speak, or to rest it, to let some areas go fallow kind of?
I have no choice because it's in my face. And what I mean by that is I've played with fire for too long, and I'm the one that, you know, talks to people about rotating their crops from one bed to the next, to the next. And I understand all the science behind that. And yet I'm also the guy that, you know, the cobbler's kids who don't have shoes. I'm the one that it's like, do what I say and not what I do sometimes, because I have this thing for tomato plants. And even though I have 16 large raised beds, I'm overplanting too many of those beds year after year with, you know, solanaceous crops. And so, you know, specifically tomatoes, but eventually that's going to catch up with you. And those diseases that reside in the soil that you continue to, you know, feed and cultivate because you keep putting back what they want, you know, those diseases have no reason to go away or die off. And so eventually, and this has happened a lot lately, I see those soil borne diseases on my plants, and it's screaming at me like, Joe, enough is enough, you know, game over. You've got to find new places. And so I'm doing that with grow bags and straw bales quite successfully, I might add, but, I mean, it's not an option anymore. I have to.
Right. So you have to make a way to rotate, quote unquote, your crops. And of course, the scientists tell us that skipping 3 years in a bed, you know, if it's the solanaceous things, for instance, a rotation is to skip 3 years. So it's not like just rotate it for one summer. It's like, rotation. Yeah.
And that's on the fast side. You know, some of these soil borne diseases, like, you know, Verticillium and Fusarium last a lot longer than that. And it's like, oh, what am I going to do now?
Yeah. Do you have, speaking of soil, do you have Asian jumping worms in the area?
Funny you should ask, Margaret.
Okay, it's not that funny, but it's kind of
funny,
tragic.
Not funny, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking, I don't know why I would think this, but I was hoping maybe that I could dodge the bullet on that one too. And, you know, probably less than a month ago, I discovered my first one, and it was undeniable. It was highly active, moving around at a rapid pace. And of course it had that white, milky white band around, all the way around. That is the sure sign of what you've got. So I'm seeing more of them.
Right. And they degrade the soil. For people who don't know about them, they degrade the soil. They process it too fast, taking out all the organic matter. And it's a terrible environmental problem in many regions. The reason I ask is because we're talking about, you know, crop rotation and leaf litter and so on and so forth. And they gobble it up. And I don't know whether the answer is to add more organic matter or not in the face of these organic matter devouring monsters. And so that's the subject of a lot of conferences that are going on. I mean, I've been writing about them since like 2013 when I interviewed someone at Great Lakes Worm Watch, but it's really becoming well known now. And I actually just bought a ticket yesterday to a two half days in January, a virtual conference by University of Massachusetts Amherst with multiple scientists presenting. So I'll give the link with a transcript of the show, and I'll send you the link by email as well. It looks like a really good cast, and I want to find out, you know, kind of, is there any cutting edge, any information or any direction on, should we be adding more organic matter than ever, or should we deprive them of organic? You know, who knows?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Such questions.
Are we feeding the worms or are we feeding the soil now? Do you know what I mean? It's very complicated.
Oh my gosh.
It's very complicated.
I'm starting to stress out here.
Yeah. One scientist said to me when I asked him that last year, he said at University of Wisconsin-Madison, he said, choose your own adventure. We don't know yet. You know, so I want to find out what this year's, you know, ideas are. But anyway, on happier notes. Well, not happier necessarily, but I know you take like a little sabbatical each August, and you spent some of it weeding, if I remember what we talked about on the phone then. Did you, what's going on with that?
Well,
how's the weeds?
I think I'm in a very small club of people that loves to weed. I love
to
weed.
No, I love it too.
Yeah,
I
know
you
do. I know.
Meditative. Yeah.
It is. So on my month-long sabbatical, which I have to do for mental sanity every year in August, and which is a great time to do it, the first, you know, a day break for an hour roughly, I set my timer actually, so it is an hour or longer with a podcast or two. I'm weeding and hand weeding on my knees down in the dirt. And I love that. But around here, I've got about 2.5 acres of some form of cultivation with native landscape beds outside of my raised bed garden. So there's plenty of places that need weeding. And I'll either do that with my scuffle hoe or by hand weeding. But even with mulch, you know, it'll get away from you. So I've got to do that. I have no choice there either.
I've been seeing... we seem to be having, because of climate change, we're having a longer, there's not frost in the ground as many months as there used to be. And, you know, things are more favorable. It's sort of a longer growing season, I guess, and more growing degree days or whatever. And the woody and other perennial type things, they just seem to be romping, you know, like that those extra days each year that they're not asleep, so to speak.
Yes.
It's just like, wow. So lots and lots and lots of for us things, especially the woody things, I say, like bittersweet vines and it's bad. It's really bad. But yeah, weeding.
Yes. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, did you grow anything new this year besides weeds?
You know, I'm finally adding more fruit trees outside of the vegetable garden. Yes. And I continue to add to my native garden. With my woodland native shrubs and so forth. I love to do that. And you know, my problem is, and Margaret, I sent you a picture while we were talking on the phone this week. I was looking outside of my office window, which the only thing between my office and my raised bed vegetable garden is a grass pathway. And there was a something point large buck staring through the glass at me. And so what I was telling you that for is because I would have a lot more things planted right now if I'd finally get a deer fence around this place to keep those kind of guys out of here from devouring everything I plant and then rutting my, you know, trees that I plant. And it's one thing after another. There's no rest for the weary around here. So try as I might, I plant a lot of things and then I just lose as many as I plant sometimes.
Well, and maybe 20 years ago, I got a deer fence around the place, and it was really the best money I ever spent because the first 10 or 15 years, you know, I did what you're saying, which is, you know, you'd plant things and you'd lose half of them, especially and the woody stuff. It was just heartbreaking when they would, you know, decimate a woody plant. And so, the deer fence is to me is the only way to go. I mean, I'm not one for trying to control it with sprays and things like that.
So. Who's got time for that? I don't, at least around here, in the volume of property.
It adds up, and it's not it's not for high deer pressure areas, those sprays. Those are for, you know, moderate to mild pressure areas, not for areas where they're bold and brazen and there's lots of them.
It is pricey. And other people have said what you said. It's the best investment they ever made, really, over time.
Yeah. So you're thinking about that. But did you grow any, besides putting in some fruit trees, anything new in the vegetable garden?
Do you know, I have never grown ground cherries before.
Oh,
and I finally did it. And, you know, I was up at Nikki Jill Boer's place a couple years ago, and she had them. She always grows them. And, you know, I finally got to sample those in real time. And they're delightful. You know, they're kind of a butterscotch, pineapple-y little cherry inside of a paper sack. And they're delicious. And they're so prolific. Oh, my gosh. You only need one plant, by the way, if anybody's thinking about doing this. But, you know, that was a little novelty thing. I don't know that I'll do it every year or again. But that's what comes to mind. And then I planted okra again. I love to eat okra, but it's... Thankfully, there are shorter varieties these days, but the classic Clemson Spineless gets, you know, 8 feet tall. And when you put it into a bed that's already 18 inches tall, even standing up on top of the bed, reaching up, it's hard to harvest, you know. But those are the two things that come to mind that are new for me. I just tend to plant what I like, and I do it year after year. And my fall garden is outrageously amazing right now. And that's a missed opportunity. I wish more people would do a fall garden. Just because summer's over doesn't mean the gardening season ends.
Right. And even up here in the north, you know, it's not just for Atlanta, but even up here in the north, if I sow as if it were spring, early spring again, or late winter, if I sow some flats in a protected spot of certain vegetable crops, edible crops, and even some herbs, in July and plant them out, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to have stuff into October. And for you, that's going to be even a longer season, right?
It is. And, you know, a lot of the things I start seed from in the middle of summer, you know, and on my sabbatical in August, I'm starting seeds. And, you know, I do that like crazy in January and February. But then in the middle of the summer, you're doing that and you're thinking, why am I doing this? But all you have to do is one time plant those seedlings out in late August, early September for me, and then see what happens. And then that's all it takes. And you are hooked. You know, you never have to justify it again. It's amazing.
I grew some new annuals for some ornamental purposes this year that I was glad someone gave me, maybe a 6-pack or something of, I don't know if you've ever grown it. It's called tassel flower. It's Amelia coccinea, E-M-I-L-I-A, Amelia. It's this very linear, I don't know, it's a couple few feet tall, very linear wand-like stems. And at the top are these little orangey, sort of fire engine orangey red puffs, these little puffy flowers that are just so hot colored and gorgeous. And they kind of, because the stems are long and thin, they kind of move in the breeze, you know, they kind of bounce around. And it was the most interesting thing. We have this butterfly here called the Pearl Crescent. It's a small butterfly. Yeah. And it's a wide ranging one. And it was like someone put out a sign and every Pearl Crescent in the county decided to come and visit Margaret's Amelia. It was like a magnet. It was so interesting. And, you know, I've seen a lot of plant animal interactions over many years, but this was crazy. And it's gorgeous also. I mean, I love the color orange, so it's gorgeous. Yeah. And so I tried some new Select Seeds has that one in their catalog, as do other people.
Duly noted.
Yeah. Nice. So, I want to ask you about seed stuff, but before we do that, I want to ask you about, I read about this spider from hell. It's in your neighborhood, right? What's this spider thing? In the headlines, what is this thing?
The Joro spider. It's a member of the golden orb weaver genus.
Right.
But this spider was first discovered around 2015, so roughly almost 7 years ago in the U.S., and they think it hitchhiked on a shipping container from somewhere in Asia. But it is big time in Georgia here in the northeast section, maybe 16 counties right now. But they are discovering it's now in South Carolina, and it's rapidly expanding. But literally this year, for the first time, I went from never having seen one before to, they were everywhere I went in my property, in every bed, between every tree, at head level or higher. These are 3 to 4 inch sized spiders, counting their legs, but they're like a golden orb weaver, but even prettier because they have red and yellow. And I mean, they're beautiful, but they're super scary looking. They're really harmless. They don't hurt you, but you know, you got to remind yourself of that because they are spooky looking, but they're everywhere. And what I worry about, you know, because I would just, I'm a live and let live guy. And so it really changed the way I had to garden this year because I really couldn't get out to do where I needed to do things because I didn't want to disturb the webs. And what's neat about these webs is they're three layered. There's the main orb, and then they have an external layer also. It's like a three-dimensional web. Mm-hmm. And there they are in the middle of it. But then they die off as winter comes. But in the process, they lay that egg sac of somewhere between 400 and 1500 eggs.
Oh no.
Right. So all that to say is, what is next year going to be like? If they everywhere this year. Yeah.
And it's an invasive species. So what's its impact going to be on the beneficial insects that it's going to consume?
And that's what we're waiting to see.
And that's bad news. Right. So
yeah, the only good news there is just they have discovered so far that they are feeding on adult marmorated stink bugs, unlike
eat those here. Good.
So we got that going for us in the meantime.
So in the last, you know, four or so minutes, I wanted to, you know, you sow so many seeds. I don't have any garden friends who sow more seeds than you do in late winter. And as you said, also again in midsummer for fall crop. And now you teach a course on the subject and so forth. And so what was the aha this year from the seed thing? And because, I mean, I know you're always refining your tactics. And I guess, are you refining them for the course?
Always.
Yeah.
This is our third year of relaunching that course. It's our most popular course by far. People love it. The community is amazing. But just empowering people to have the confidence and the knowledge to start their seed successfully. But, you know, it's an evolving process too. And like over the past few years, you know, this discussion of peat-based soil medium is a big deal. So, you know, let's do a peat-free option and all of that. So the default has been core. And so, you know, as part of the course, I would trial all these different core options, which is ground up coconut husk. But considering where it comes from, you have to take into this consideration the salinity of that. So it's high potassium content, which basically stunts the growth of the seedlings coming up, and they just sit there unless you find a way to clear out the salt.
Desalinate, right.
So, you know, we're documenting side-by-side trials, we're videoing everything, and we're trying to come up with ways for an alternative. I, honest to goodness, I do love how peat moss works for seed starting, but at the same time, I want to find an alternative that's more ecologically responsible, you know? So that's the struggle right now,
that's one of the things that you're kind of iterating and you're actually, you're not just saying go get this other thing, you're actually hands-on trying it, knowing what you know. And again, like we said at the beginning of the program, you know, kind of learning all the time, even though you already know how to start seeds, you're trying to face this new challenge.
New techniques.
Yeah, it's the whole peat thing. And I mean, Monty Don and lots of high profile garden celebrity people have, you know, made the call more loudly recently to, you know, not use peat because it's not a non-renewable resource and so forth. Yeah. But we need more information, hands-on trials and so forth on good mixes that we can use instead. And in terms of, most people are going to want a bagged thing. I don't even know. I can read the labels and see who's not including peat in their mixes now, but I haven't tried those soils. And you know, some bagged potting soils stink. Some are not good, right?
This is true. And we trial so many of those different things. I'll trial, you know, 20 different mediums at the same time and try to make that the only variable and make everything else a constant.
Right.
To isolate, you know, what's working. And so it's fascinating, but frustrating at the same time. And you are so right about that, you know, and we just all need more information. Last week on my podcast, I interviewed a peat specialist, Dr. Merit Turetsky, and it was a real eye opener. It was, you know, a fact-based, no dog in the hunt kind of thing.
Right.
Just laying out the facts out there. But it really does compel us to want to find alternatives if we're concerned about carbon release and, you know, destroying ecosystems.
Right. Now, yeah. I know we can't sign up for the course yet, or and I'll give the link with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com to your online gardening academy homepage and so forth. But is there like a list that we get on so that we can be alerted when courses come are in their sales period? Or how does that, is that obvious on the page if I send people over there?
Well, if you send people to joegardener.com/notify, they'll get notified on the launches because our launches are only for a week long because I walk through the course with them. So I'm mentoring them as they go. So we just can't make it an evergreen course. But those are starting in January. The master seed starts at the end of January.
Oh, cool. Oh, perfect timing. Okay, well, good. Well, Joe, thank you for sort of looking back at the year and looking ahead at the next one together. And, you know, CM down there in Atlanta.
You got
holiday
it, CW.
Love from CW. Yeah, I'll talk to you soon.
At you. Okay, thanks.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, I hope, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.